This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with George Genovese, U.S. Army Air Corps veteran of World War II, one-time Major League Baseball player, longtime coach, manager, and scout, and the subject of the new autobiography, A Scout's Report, My 70 Years in Baseball. If you're in California, you can meet George and author Dan Taylor Saturday, July 11th at Barnes & Noble in Fresno from 2 to 5 p.m. They'll sign that book for you. Obviously, there's a lot more in the book than what we can fit into this radio time today. We've talked about his childhood on Staten Island, his lifelong love for baseball, the World War II injury that affected his baseball playing career. And when we left off, we heard about his transition to scout, first for the San Francisco Giants, later for their rival L.A. Dodgers. 44 of the players that George signed made it to the major leagues. A lot of them are names that you know, and you can read all about it in the book. George was also simultaneously coaching a team in Southern California on weekends, developing some of the players that he would sign. I know we could be here all day long talking baseball, but what are some of those success stories that stand out?
Well, one of my favorites is Chili Davis.
Chili Davis.
He's still a coach over there and with the Red Sox now.
And if you were a Giants fan in the 80s, you were a big Chili Davis fan, power hitting, switch hitting outfielder, but he wasn't a switch hitter when you saw him, was he?
He was a catcher.
He was a catcher?
And the coach on his high school team told him to get lost, don't come out for the team. One of my guys, he and his brother had brought Chili over to the Angels, but the one kid that I had given the job to manage our rookie league club was Ernie Rodriguez. He and his brother had brought Chili Davis out to Angels. They were turned down. So he said, can I bring this kid out so you can look at him? I worked him out. I said, you want to play ball? Yeah. It was just down the street there. I said, I threw to him. And I said, let me see you swing the bat left-handed. It looked like he might learn. I said, I would like you to try to hit a little left-handed because you really can run. You're not going to catch. I'm going to make an outfielder of you.
Yeah.
Because later on when you can't run anymore, you may still be able to catch if you had to. Well, that's the truth. And he went on to be a great player. You know, I signed him.
Well, and isn't there a story now when you're putting your neck on the line for him, saying this guy is worth signing, that you took him to a workout and he hit right-handed and showed some power and was about to walk away?
Yeah.
And you stepped in? You told the other guys, wait, he's a switch hitter?
Yeah.
And Chili said, no, I'm not?
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, he never would have been a switch hitter.
No, but there's a World Series trophy. He sent it to me. You know, he was born in Jamaica.
Yeah.
His parents were Jamaicans. They didn't know anything about baseball. You know, it wasn't their game. They're very nice people.
You know, and you never know how a player would have done in another organization or in a different scenario. But it was because of your idea and your prodding that he became a switch hitter. And people maybe not, you know, don't realize this, but if you talk about switch hitting power hitters, there's Mickey Mantle, there's Eddie Murray.
That's right.
And then pretty much Chili Davis is in that next tier, but guys that were switch hitters and bombed that many. So he's a tremendous big league player. Probably would have never been a switch hitter without your influence. And so he tells you, if I ever win a World Series, I'm giving you the trophy.
That's what he did.
Did you expect him to follow through on that?
No, he was a great kid. I remember he called me up one day. He was in Cedar Rapids. He said, Mr. Genovese, I'm thinking about the Sunday team playing. He says, I'm in Cedar Rapids. How's the team doing?
The team that you're coaching back here?
Yeah.
How about that?
You know,
he really felt a connection to you and indebted to you.
He's so grateful. He says, George, without you, nothing nice would have happened. That, to me, is worth all the money in the world, you know. The kids, thank you. I don't need it, you know, to know that they appreciate you, give them an opportunity.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of the guys you signed, the hundreds of players you signed, a lot of them probably said, hey, I'll do this, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But he said, if I ever win a World Series, I'm giving you my trophy.
He lived up to everything he said.
And Giants fans would have loved to see him do that in a Giants uniform. They've had to wait till this last decade to get a few of those trophies.
Yeah.
But in 1991, he's on a Minnesota Twins team that wins the World Series.
That's right.
So how did he get you that trophy? How did that all go down?
His brother brought it, knocked on my door.
So you get a knock on the door.
He knocked. Brother said, this is yours, George. He says, you made him get this.
What did that mean to you when that trophy showed up at your door?
I was surprised. you know, I always tell him, you can always have it. That's yours. He says, without you, nothing nice would have happened to me. Uh-huh. That's his words.
That's quite a tribute. And I know you've got a lot of stories like that. Another thing I heard, another one of your success stories, you talk about power hitters. There's a great power hitter for many years in the National League named George Foster.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't teach him his power, but you did teach him something else that came in handy in the World Series. Tell me what that was.
Oh, I taught him how to throw.
That sounds pretty simple. He didn't know how to throw?
That's it. He used to grab the ball and squeeze it so tight that when he released the ball, he couldn't throw the ball more than 30 feet.
Huh.
And he could always hit. And I'd watch him hit. I had him on my little Sunday team. I thought he could play. I'm probably the only one at that particular time that showed an interest in him. You know, he was a very quiet, withdrawn kid. I watched him, wondered why he couldn't throw. And I saw the way he was gripping the ball. And I explained to him. I had a bunch of balls, and I put them in center field. And I'd say, throw the ball between my arms to the third baseman. I'd get out there a little bit. So little by little, he was learning how to throw. I said, you can't choke the ball. You got to have it. I said, that's the way you throw a changeup. Really, all that little work did. And in the World Series, he threw out the guy at home plate to the catcher.
Johnny Bench. So he threw out what would have been the go-ahead run at home.
That's right. He never would have been able to do that. See,
uh-huh.
If he hadn't known. We practice it and practice. I think that's why nobody noticed him in high school, because he couldn't throw.
What are you hoping that people get out of the book? If someone shows up in Fresno on July 11th at Barnes & Noble and comes and gets your signature in that book and then starts opening it up and reads through it, what are you hoping they get from it?
Well, I hope whoever reads the book, or a young player that has ambition, the opportunity is there if you love the game. Whether you get a reward or not doesn't, you know, if nobody gave me a reward, it wouldn't have made it. I loved the game. From the time I can remember, I lived about 1 mile from the ball field. I have pictures home where this field was. You'd need a blueprint to catch a ground ball. It was how bad it was. No nice grass. No. The Department of Sanitation was down there. I could still see my brother hitting the balls up on the top. Now we have no baseballs. We've got to go look and find them. That's where we worked out. It was about a mile from the house.
Uh-huh.
My little dog was in one of the pictures. Would see me to leave the house with the bat on my shoulder. My mother turned him loose. He knew where I was.
Uh-huh.
Come down. You know, I'm not making this up. If he saw a foul ball, he'd go get it, put it in his mouth and run and bring it to the pitcher's box. Funny, but I mean, it happened. You say, I had the dog for 14 years. When I came back from the war, that dog was still alive. My father says, why don't you go hide in the closet? And I did. He smelled whatever it is, a scent. He knew where I was. It was really something to watch his little scratch at the door to say, welcome home, George.
Uh-huh. How about that? Well, if there's anything else that you want to mention, feel free. But I just want to say thank you for serving our country. And thank you for telling us your stories about that and your life in baseball. And I hope you have many more great baseball memories to come. In closing, is there anything that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm proud of my family. We always pulled for each other no matter what. I've had an enjoyable life, a career, lucky to be alive. And I'm always welcome for that because I think the good Lord looked after me.
Can't argue with that. George Genovese, 93 years old. Go meet him in Fresno on July 11th or South Pasadena on the 16th. Enjoy that new book, A Scout's Report. All the details at hometownheroesradio.com. There are some short videos of George on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And in our remaining time here, let's hear from the man who wrote this book with George, Dan Taylor, longtime television sportscaster in California. Dan, where did this book come from? What made you want to write a book about a nonagenarian baseball scout?
Well, one of George's close friends, Artie Harris, a longtime coach in Southern California, over the years that he had spent with George, he came away from all their conversations thinking that George could really make a great book. And we have mutual friends, and Artie mentioned this to a friend of mine and asked this guy, who was an entertainment attorney, if he had any authors in mind, and he gratefully mentioned my name and kind of took hold from there.
What are some of the things that stand out to you with his story
that as you read back through your work here, you say, boy, this really is remarkable about this man.
Well, you know, as a fan, you go in knowing that he was responsible for some of the greatest Giants of all time. But then when you really get behind the scenes and understand that, you know, he found Gary Matthews 10 days before the draft. It's just unheard of. And the guy winds up being a first-round draft pick. Completely unheard of. Gary Maddux did not play. He got cut from his junior college team. So it's not just a remarkable sign, but it's an incredible sign. George Foster didn't know how to throw a baseball properly when George got him. And George liked enough other tools in him that he thought, I'm not going to change him. I'll let all the other scouts downgrade him for his bad throwing, and I'm going to get him. And when I get him, I'll change him at that time. So, you know, some of these stories behind the stories were really remarkable to learn.
With regard to his service in World War II and what you learned about who he was, what kind of respect and admiration does that give you for him and for that entire generation?
One of the things, that generation came from the Depression. And so they had a tremendous work ethic instilled in them. And in addition to that, they had a sense of, I've got to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And you see that, and that translates to his baseball scouting. And those are qualities he looks for in players. So just his people skills that way are remarkable. What he went through, the fear that everybody that got on that train or got on that ship felt, him telling me about sailing out of Seattle, wondering as he watched America disappear behind the ship if he was ever going to see it again. And then the great sense of euphoria he felt as he came under the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, all too often we see images in photographs, we see moving pictures on cable or in films, but we don't really understand the emotions that these guys went through. When you're living it, it's a horrifying experience. And they're trained to push that aside and focus on the task at hand and getting off the boat and trying to quickly dig a foxhole in coral, assemble a gun blindfolded on the boat, preparing them to quickly assemble a gun as they've gotten off the ship, you know, on the beach, and they're being strafed by a Japanese plane. It's very hard, I think, for my generation to comprehend what they've been through and to really understand and thoroughly appreciate the makeup of these men, but they're just remarkable.
I'm curious, for someone who spent so much time with him and you really immersed yourself in his life story and had to capture it in this new book, do you find yourself in some ways disappointed that we'll never know what kind of big league ball player he could have been because of the shoulder injury from that fall in uniform in World War II? Or do you say, you know what, if that hadn't happened, we wouldn't have had one of the greatest scouts, if not the greatest scout in baseball history? How do you balance that?
I look at it just the way you've just said it. And I think George and I, we've talked about it and have the same feeling. Everything in life happens for a reason. And you can sit around and woe is me and why me. But at the same time, all these experiences prepared George to touch lives. And that's what he did. He took young men who a lot of people didn't view as prospects. And he worked with them, didn't just observe them, but he took them out. He picked George Foster up every day after school and pitched batting practice to him. Same with Gary Maddux. Look at the career they went on to have. Look at the life they went on to have. I mean, Gary Maddux has been a very successful businessman on the East Coast. Those things would not have happened without George Genovese, and George Genovese would not be the man he is today were it not for his experience in the military and what he went through in World War II.
I know that the foreword of the book is written by Tommy Lasorda, and probably that's reason enough for a lot of people listening right now to pick up the book just to see what Tommy says. But was there something else that, in all the people you talked to, a comment that someone made about George or an expression of how they viewed him and what he meant to them that has really stuck with you and really kind of puts it into perspective for you?
You know, there were several different people that really had amazing things to say about him. But Jack Clark said one day, there are about five people in this game that mean more than the game itself. When you think of players, the name Babe Ruth pops to mind first. And when you think of scouts, George Genovese's name should pop to mind first. And I thought, that's just such a remarkable perspective to put on the man and his impact on the game.
I'll put you on the spot. Do you think he belongs in Cooperstown, in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
I don't think there's any question scouts should be recognized by the Hall of Fame. They're not. And scouts, by and large, have a lot of frustration over that. And I think that there should be no other scout recognized first than George Genovese. When you look at his numbers, 44 major league players out of 250 signed, 17 All-Star games that he had at least one player in the All-Star game. You can go something like a stretch of 39 years where he had a starter in the major leagues. In 1973, there were about a half a dozen games where seven of the nine players the Giants put on the field were signed by George Genovese. There is no other scout in the history of baseball that has had that kind of an impact on the game.
perhaps someday we'll see that happen. If so, let's hope it's while that sparkle still lives in George Genovese's eye. You can hear more of George's baseball memories in the podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com. You'll also find all the information on those book signings with George and Dan Taylor in Fresno on July 11th, Pasadena on the 16th. It was fun discussing our national pastime as we celebrate our national birthday. And this Independence Day and every day, let stories like the one George shared today serve as a reminder that freedom is not free.